RMWorldTravel.com is your place for show archives, travel news, sponsor links, and so much more. You can also connect with Robert and Mary and the RM World Travel Show team. Now, back to America's number one travel radio show.
As Mary and I bring all of you back for more travel talk, it is time for today's personal connection that's sponsored by TravelGuard.com/Gary.
Whether your next adventure is a long or short getaway, maybe it's international or domestic, do it with TravelGuard.com/Gary because unforeseen world happenings, wild weather, and more could compromise your plans.
Absolutely could. Good, folks. You know, packing a travel guard insurance plan, it's just a smart thing to do. It covers so many unknowns that could impact your travels, including medical expenses and evacuation, work-related cancellations, roadside assistance, passport or ticket replacement. There are things like lost or delayed baggage, trip cancellations, interruptions and delays, prescription replacement, translation services. You'll have someone available to you 24/7 and a lot more. Before you travel, get the coverage you should have at TravelGuard.com/Carry or go to RMWorldTravel.com, click on sponsors.
Okay, today's personal connection reconnects us with Kevin Fedarko, who set out with his best friend Pete McBride a few years back to hike the entire length of the Grand Canyon, all 750 miles of it, and they joined us here back on May 4th, 2019, during the canyon's 100-year anniversary as a national park. Today we're checking in to see what Kevin's up to now, and here he is on the Patriot Mobile Show Hotline.
Well, he is indeed. Kevin, nice to reconnect with you. Welcome back to America's number one travel radio show.
Thanks so much. Really happy to be here.
Well, great to have you back with us today for sure. So, you know, clearly you have been busy in a different sort of way, documenting yours and Pete's journey across the canyon from what we discussed last time. Yeah, I'm guessing writing about it has been a lot calmer of an experience than what you encountered in the canyon. So let's talk about the title that you've chosen. And I want to share that with folks right now. It's A Walk in the Park, A True Story of a Spectacular Misadventure in the Grand Canyon. Since we have many new listeners since you were on with us last time, explain misadventure rather than adventure.
Well, the word misadventure really encapsulates the idea that in addition to moving through an exciting landscape and experiencing a kind of turbocharged set of events, there were just a whole host of things that went wrong on this project. Beginning really with the idea itself, the notion of walking across the length of Grand Canyon National Park. It's the, you know, second most visited and single most iconic national park in America, and yet it has no trail that will enable you to easily connect the eastern to the western end of the park. And that's because the landscape is so broken and fragmented and shattered that it really resists human beings moving across it on foot. And so when my good friend and collaborator, Pete McBride, came to me with the idea that we do this, it was a rather harebrained scheme, and a whole host of things just went off the rails from the very beginning.
I think that's important what
he
just mentioned.
That is honest, and when you read the book, that is all in there as well. So as you said, there's no single trail, and part of the trail includes the Colorado River, which you guys did paddle. Part of it includes hikes as high up as 3,000 feet above the river, from what I recall during our last conversation. Just give everyone a brief overview of the intensity of this physically and mentally, particularly when it comes to the terrain.
Well, one way of starting to answer that question is just to consider the idea that if there is a highway through the Grand Canyon, it's called the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. It's the tool that carved and created and polished and honed and sculpted the canyon in the first place. And over the course of its journey through the park, from the eastern end at Lee's Ferry to the western terminus at what's called the Grand Wash Cliffs, the river travels about 277 miles. But if you're on foot, Mary, there are so many side canyons that you must work your way into and back out of. There's so much climbing and descending along the matrix of cliffs and ledges, that mile-high rampart of rock that soars from the river to the sky on either end of the Colorado, you will have covered just under 800 miles if you're on foot. And over the course of those 800 miles, you're confronting a whole host of challenges, one of the greatest of which is finding water. Many times, Pete and I found ourselves 2,000, 2,500 feet above the Colorado on cliffs and ledges that would have prevented us from getting to the river, and we were completely dependent on what are called potholes, incredibly thin, ephemeral puddles of water that collect after each storm that evaporate after each and every rainfall. And you hopscotch from one to the next.
Think about that.
Knowing that if you can't find the one that you're searching towards, you will probably die within about 48 hours.
So you have to live with that every day. And that's also in the book, in terms of how stressful that was, in addition to all of the other elements and wildlife and everything else going on with the terrain. So, Kevin, very few people will ever have the desire, the resources, or the gumption, quite frankly, to take on this type of endeavor to see the Grand Canyon. Very few people have ever done it. What do you want people to know about the canyon without doing what you and Pete did, even if it's visiting the way most of us will see it, which is the South Rim experience, which is lovely, but what do you want people to know about the canyon?
Well, two things. The first of them, I think, is that you do not need to strap a 55-pound pack on your back and spend, you know, 75 days on 8 back-to-back expeditions over the course of 14 months to experience, to touch and be touched by the most extraordinary parts of this landscape. Most of us visit Grand Canyon, as you just said, Mary, by driving up to the edge of the South Rim. There are about 6 million of us that do this each and every year. If you can find a quiet spot, if you can walk off by yourself and just simply allow yourself to take in the vision of that abyss that opens at your feet, and experience one of the treasures that Pete and I came to appreciate the most, which is the silence and the stillness that the landscape is incapable of encompassing. That in and of itself is no more extraordinary than anything that happened to us over the course of our journey. And the second thing is that although this place looks monumental and eternal, it's incredibly fragile. It's a desert wilderness. It's beset by a whole host of economic development projects that threaten the integrity of both the park and the canyon. And it requires protection like all of our national parks. It requires a group of citizens who commit themselves to fighting on behalf of this and each and every other landscape that we've set aside, not just for our own enjoyment, but for future generations of America.
Yeah, Kevin, and I appreciate you saying that, and I love also the fact, just thinking about the stillness and that silence and so forth. But, you know, Mary and I, we went back and listened to the original interview with us before today's show that you did, that folks, it's actually archived on our website. And, you know, the last time we talked, we didn't discuss the fellow hikers you met along the way. So I want to do that today because, you know, I know you encountered veteran hikers who provided some helpful tips, and candidly, whether it's hiking or traveling in a different way, whatever it may be, often the journey is about the people we meet and the connections that we make. So talk about some of the people that you met along the way, Kevin.
Well, the most important thing is that, you know, Pete and I got in so far over our heads that on the first segment of this journey, we were spanked so badly that we had to give up. We had to crawl out of the canyon, retreat back to Flagstaff with our tails between our legs, and contemplate the possibility that we were going to have to call up our editors at National Geographic headquarters in Washington, D.C., and tell them that we had failed. And that was the point where we were adopted by a group of long-distance backpackers and hikers in Flagstaff who were incredibly passionate about the wilderness and the natural landscape inside of the Grand Canyon, and who committed themselves to helping us move through that landscape. And at that point, it became what you just touched on, Robert. It's a communal enterprise. Often as Americans, we think about wilderness as something that we experience in solitude by ourselves, but actually that's just not true. So many of us go to our national parks with families, with spouses, with children, with grandparents. We go to these places to connect to the beauty of the natural world with people we love, and the beauty of the natural world enables us to connect with the people that we love in new and marvelous ways. And that's one of the most remarkable gifts that these places have to offer each and every one of us.
So in between the pages of the book are stories of wildlife encounters, long days, long nights, other times when you thought about giving up and you continued to keep going, and this endless battle of the elements of heat and cold. What goes through your head sometimes when you have a quiet moment now that it's been completed and reflect back on what you accomplished?
Well, maybe it's the juxtaposition between all of the things that you just spoke about, the harshness, the suffering, the challenges and difficulties, the imperative of figuring out how to survive in a harsh landscape, the juxtaposition between all of that and these moments of just transcendent beauty that descend on you at odd moments. Each and every night when it came time for Pete and I to set up camp and drop our packs and lie back after dinner, we were able to take stock of our surroundings. And one of the things that we just did each and every night is we gazed into a night sky that was filled with more stars than either of us had ever seen in our lives, more stars than anybody who lives in a city like Boston or New York or Dallas or Los Angeles is able to really gaze at and contemplate. And one of the things that a night sky is that vast and that deep can convey is how tiny and insignificant we are as human beings. Not just individual humans, but all of human civilization.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what you're talking about there, Kevin, also, listen, that's an aspect of travel, regardless of the type of travel that you do. And you are right, when you put yourself out there and you just allow yourself to hear and understand and just take on the onus of the world, there's no question we understand that. I want to give folks the book again. It's called A Walk in the Park, A True Story of a Spectacular Misadventure in the Grand Canyon. You can also find out more information at kevinfedarko.com, F-E-D-A-R-K-O. Kevin, really nice reconnecting with you today. Enjoy the weekend, okay?
Robert and May, so nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, you too, and congratulations on your growing business.
Thank you.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Bye-bye. You too.
All right, Kevin Fedarko, Mary.
Amazing story of that. Very few people have done that.
Yeah, read the book, folks, and then let us know what you think as well. Really appreciate that. As we hit the bottom of the hour break, three more segments are still ahead on this July 13th broadcast. Keep those radios locked in. Your Robert Mary World Travel Get-Together rolls on.
Today's edition of RM World Travel will be right back, and you can always stay connected with the program at rmworldtravel.com.